today we've been exploring these proposed rate hikes by the Connecticut Department of Transportation that would increase fares on Metro North and Shoreline East by 5%, and bus rides, including CT Fast Track, would go up 25 cents per ride. He is a transportation advocate, has a great blog, talkingtransportation.blogspot.com. He's also founder of a new advocacy effort, commuteractiongroup.org. We've had him on the program before, and we welcome him back, Jim Cameron. Jim, welcome back to Front and Center.
A pleasure to be with you, Dan.
Jim, you wrote a piece on your blog, talkingtransportation.blogspot.com, headlined, "Don't Blame Malloy for Latest Fare Hike." So let's start there. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, I enjoyed listening to Senator Wong and agreed with much of what he said. I mean, it is all coming back down to the budget process, because it's the budget that's created by the legislature that gives money to the Department of Transportation to subsidize fares on Metro North and on the buses in the state. And because the legislature didn't come up with that money, transportation is taking it on the neck just as other departments have. But this is really not the fault of the governor. I've never been shy about criticizing the governor in the past, and I'm just calling it like I see it. In this case, it's the legislature's fault.
Now, turning it into a political argument, essentially, though, Senator Wong says the Republicans aren't even given a seat at the budget table because the Democrats dominate the legislature. What do you say to that?
Well, that's true. I think the Republicans have been kept in the dark. They have not been given a chance to be heard. They had a budget proposal which would have funded transportation and not increased taxes. But if I have a criticism of the Republicans and the Democrats, it's that they have out of hand rejected other potential funding mechanisms to help pay for mass transit. You remember that the governor proposed this $100 billion 30-year project to improve transportation in the state. Well, we're not even talking about that. We're just talking about funding the transportation that we have today. But he created a task force to look at different funding mechanisms, and they made a number of proposals, including, yes, fare increases, but also increasing the gasoline tax, dedicating part of the sales tax to transportation, and looking at other funding mechanisms, not popular with people, of course, tolls, and this idea of a vehicle miles tax. Well, the Republicans and the Democrats in the legislature have rejected those ideas out of hand, but not come up with other funding solutions. So there is no free ride, no pun intended. There is no free way of paying for our mass transit in this state, trains and buses. We're going to have to pay for it either in through the fare box or through other funding mechanisms.
Well, sticking with initials, politicians from both sides of the aisle have said a VMT is DOA.
Yeah, and I think that's wrong. I think they rejected it before it was even explained by the governor, sold to us as a funding possibility, let alone studied. So, you know, shame on them. At least let's look at the ideas and explain them and tell people why I think a vehicle miles tax is the fairest way of paying for the improvements on our highways and trains. But if it's rejected out of hand, if it's DOA, and there are Democrats saying that as well as Republicans, what's the alternative, folks?
Now, getting back to your story about Malloy is not to blame for the latest fare hikes, I want to give you a chance to answer a comment that was placed below that story by one of the readers. Jim, sorry, but I have to disagree. The fault is squarely on the shoulders of CDOT, who squandered $5 million in the past year over the Stamford Rail Station garage. Had they not done so, we would not have had this much funding to find by adding another tax fee to the back of our weary taxpayers. What do you say to that?
Well, that comment, and, you know, I encourage people to comment on my blog. I want to have a robust discussion about that. That comment is absolutely right. What the Department of Transportation has done with the Stamford Garage Project is shameful. This is a garage that we knew for a decade was going to have to be torn down they hemmed and they hawed. They finally decided that they were going to hire a private developer. And 3 years ago, they announced the choice of a developer to tear down the garage, build new garages within walking distance. They have yet to sign a contract. In the meantime, the old garage was in such dilapidated shape that pieces of concrete were falling on folks' cars. So they had to close the garage. That lost them a lot of parking revenue. They had to subsidize another private parking lot nearby. So, yeah, they've lost millions of dollars on that project. But, you know, this is let's not compare apples and oranges here. I mean, they have invested a great deal of money in other projects as well, too. It's not that they lost $5 million on the garage that forced this fare increase. This fare increase really came through the budget process.
Well, the Senator Huang, and you heard him say that he's proposing that we bond for this massive infrastructure improvement, but he also says that our bonding priorities are out of whack, that we give $1 million for a mural at an old factory in Winsted for a museum. We give money for a statue in Hartford. We bond money, and this is me saying this, bond money over $1 million for a bicycle path. And he says our priorities are out of whack. What do you say to that?
Again, I agree with him. I think that the way that we raise bond money in this state just doesn't make sense. You know, I mean, the idea of bonding is that you spread out the cost of a major capital investment over a period of time so that people aren't paying for it in one large gulp, but they're paying for it over the useful time of that project. Intensive infrastructure investment such as roads and rails makes perfect sense to be bonded. So, again, I agree with the senator.
Now, we're getting these fare hikes, and of course you're in the southern part of the state, so you know this. Every year we're getting these fare hikes. What do you hear from your readers? What do you hear from people?
Well, we have had fare increases for each of the past few years, but they've been a 1% fare increase. That was baked into the budget process years ago when we decided to buy new rail cars, the feeling being that the passengers who were enjoying the cars should pay part of that cost. I think the last substantial fare increase was in 2014. I think that was maybe 4 or 5%. You know, the upstate attitude among your listeners is those people on the Gold Coast who take the trains, they're all millionaires. They can pay for their own damn trains. I mean, I've heard that from lawmakers when I've gone up and testified in Hartford. Well, I'm sorry, we're not all millionaires down here, but I remind your listeners that 40% of all the tax revenue in this state is paid by residents of Fairfield County. And the reason people live here is not just the great beaches and the schools and the quality of life, but because it is affordable. If we make living in Fairfield County and trying to get to a job in New York City more and more expensive, people will move, and we will take their tax dollars with them.
Should the state legislature have a special session on this transportation issue before the election?
I think that's a brilliant idea, but it's never going to happen. There's not a lawmaker who's up for re-election this year who has the guts to be honest with constituents about what's coming. I mean, they're all going to say, oh, no, I don't support tolls. I don't support a vehicle miles tax. They're all going to turn out at the public hearings in September and say, I oppose this fare increase. They're going to get reelected, and then they're going to turn around in the next legislative session and have to do something. It'll be some sort of a revenue increase, either fare increases, raise the gasoline tax, put tolls, vehicle miles tax. I'm telling you, it's coming, folks. But there's not a lawmaker who's trying to get, reelected who's going to be honest with you and tell you what the facts are.
Doesn't the public see through that?
I hope they do. I hope that during the campaign that those people who are seeking reelection, who are responsible for this budget problem, explain to constituents why they approved the budget that required layoffs and reductions in many parts of state government and force this fare increase. And it's incumbent upon voters, I think, to, you know, force those issues, to ask those lawmakers, why did you create this problem? What are you going to do to solve it? what is the long-term solution to the funding of our trains? You know, our trains operate at a deficit. We have the highest rail fares of any commuter line in the United States. That's because our subsidy is the lowest. The subsidy in Connecticut is about 24-25%. The Long Island Railroad gets a 50% subsidy from the state of New York. Why subsidize? Well, you want to encourage people to take mass transit. But as Senator Wong pointed out, the folks who live in Connecticut don't have a choice. I mean, they're really a captive audience. They're not able to drive to New York City. They have to take the train. And if Hartford's attitude is make them pay for it, then they're only going to do it for so long.
Why is our subsidy at 25%?
Why is our subsidy lower than the others?
Yeah.
Because I think that the attitude of Hartford is that we're all fat cats living in Fairfield County. We're all millionaires. We have no choice. Sock it to them. They're going to pay whatever they have to pay.
Well, now, is this a state or a federal subsidy?
That's a state subsidy. That's a subsidy built into the budgeting process. There's no railroad in this country, a passenger railroad at least, that actually makes a profit. Every single railroad, including Amtrak, including Metro North, the Long Island Railroad, the MBTA, you name it, they're all subsidized to some extent because the cost of operating a railroad is very expensive, and the fares do not cover those costs.
Well, there are going to be some people out there who say, where's the logic in subsidizing a losing venture?
Well, why do we subsidize the education system? Why do we spend money on football stadiums in East Hartford? I mean, my taxes paid for a football stadium in East Hartford I'm never going to use. Why do we subsidize the state university system? Because there's social good that comes from those things. And the idea is to keep the subsidy as low as possible, but still keep the access to the important, crucial, vital service that operation provides. I mean, trains in the southern part of this state, especially in Fairfield County, are as crucial to the economic vitality of this region as is electricity, as is water. It's a utility. It's provided as a public service. And in Connecticut's case, three-quarters of the cost is borne by the people that use it. The other quarter is borne by the rest of the state.
Are the trains full to capacity? Do you know what the capacity is for these trains?
Well, here again, let's go back to 2005 when Governor Rell was smart enough to come to office, and one of the first things she did was to say, we need to order new rail cars. The old rail cars were older than the passengers. They were 30 and 35 years into their 25-year life expectancy. They were breaking down. They were being held together with gaffer's tape. So we ordered new cars, but we didn't order enough. I mean, ridership has increased by 4 or 5% a year. That's a good sign because that's a sign of a recovering economy. People have jobs to go to again. But we didn't order enough new rail cars so that even today, with a net additional number of cars over what we used to have, we're still seeing standing room only conditions on many rush hour trains. So shame on us. We didn't plan for the future enough, and we're going to have to at some point go and find more rail cars, and that's going to be a very expensive proposition.
What does a rail car go for?
These new multiple unit cars, the electric cars that run on the main line, are about $2.5 to $3 million a piece. And they're of a custom design. They have to operate under the wire, under the electric catenary system in Connecticut, and also operate on the third rail system going into Grand Central. So they're not an off-the-shelf design. These cars were built by Kawasaki, which their competitors, Bombardier, who lost the bid, actually claimed they're taking a loss in building these cars because they wanted a toehold in the North American market. They built a production facility in Lincoln, Nebraska to manufacture these cars. And they're working great. I mean, they're really nice, reliable cars. They work in the winter. They work in the summer. The air conditioning is reliable. They're comfortable. They have plugs at every seat. You can plug in your laptop or your cell phone or whatever you want. But they're very expensive to manufacture. And there's really only one manufacturer that kind of, you know, got us by the, you know what.
Yeah. What's the condition of the rails and the electricity structure, the electrical structure under which these trains operate?
Well, the catenary, the overhead power line, has been under renovation for over 10 or 15 years now. And that work is trying to be accelerated because in some places the catenary was decades old. I think in some places some of the infrastructure on Metro North dates back to the Woodrow Wilson administration. So the catenary is being replaced. It is more reliable. There are less instances than we used to have of, you know, what we call wires down, the catenary being, you know, ripped from its overhead supports. I have to credit Metro North, of whom I have never been shy of being critical in the past. I think they have done a great job in the past couple of years under the new president, Joseph Gilletti, who came to office with a railroad that had, you know, suffered derailments and the fatalities. And he's done a lot of work to try and improve the infrastructure. Again, a very expensive proposition.
Does the state of Connecticut receive any federal subsidies to underwrite this cost?
You've got me there on what the specifics might be. I imagine there is some federal money. They have received federal grants, for example, to help pay for the replacement of the walk swing bridge in Norwalk, which was stuck in an open position a couple of times, breaking up service on the entire Northeast Corridor. Amtrak trains, which run over our tracks, and this is the only section of the Northeast Corridor between Boston and Washington that is not owned by Amtrak. It is owned by the state of Connecticut from the New York State line to New Haven. Amtrak trains run over those tracks, and they pay us for that privilege as well, too.
I'm just curious if there's any federal subsidies involved, how we compare from a percentage standpoint to the other states in the region.
Well, let's take the highways, for example. I think we get far less subsidy than other states do from the federal government when it comes to our highways. I mean, your listeners are probably more concerned with the condition of Interstate 84 and the rebuild that's going to be coming there, I-91. I mean, they're out there driving around their cars. They're probably not sitting on a train. So, I mean, look at the cost that's going to be involved in rebuilding the viaduct project in East Hartford. That's going to be a lot of federal money.
I mean, is that somebody's fault? Are our lawmakers in Washington from Connecticut not doing enough to get more federal funds back here?
Well, I think it's part of the problem is political. You know, we live in a blue state, and we're looking at a red majority when it comes to Congress. The Republicans are much more willing to spend money on their state's highways than they are to subsidize, you know, a blue state like Connecticut. So I think Senators Blumenthal, and our congressional delegation do what they can to make sure we get as much as we can. But, it's a hard argument to make, when you're dealing with a Republican majority. It's kind of the flip side of what Senator Wong was complaining about in Hartford. You know, why do our state legislatures, why does our Congress play party politics when it comes to funding something as crucial as transportation?
As you know, Department of Transportation is going to start having public hearings on these rate hikes on September the 1st, but isn't that really just for show? I mean, they can unilaterally impose these fare hikes, right?
Oh, yeah. It's what I call, political drama. It's a pro forma exercise where the Department of Transportation commissioner and staffers sit at the front of the room, and all kinds of angry commuters and local officials and Senator Wong and others will stand up and rant and rave and say it's not fair and it's too expensive, and then the DLT will do what it has to do. I mean, there are two choices here. We have a deficit in the Department of Transportation budget. We either fill that by increasing revenue through a fare increase or by reducing costs by cutting service. So nobody wants a service decrease. Nobody wants to see their trains cut. The trains are full, folks. So, and here's another example. I mean, these public hearings were scheduled from 4 to 7 p.m.
Yeah.
in cities like Stamford and New Haven. A perfect time to hold a public hearing, which makes it impossible for commuters to attend. So to their credit, many lawmakers, Senator Wong, Senator Boucher, State Rep. Gail Laviel, as soon as they saw the scheduling times of these hearings, they called the DOT and they said, what are you thinking? I mean, it's a political drama you're putting on here, but at least make the hearings at a time when people who are on the trains can get off the trains and come and testify. So the times have been extended.
So essentially, it's going to be a dog and pony show. Like you said, they'll get up and rant and rave and turn red in the face. But in the end, DOT is going to do what it has to do, and that's raise the fares.
You got it. That's about it. Now, I hope that the DOT will use the public hearings to explain the process by which they came up with this fare increase, to explain how the legislature left them with a gaping hole in their budget. I think that they owe that to the people who are going to be paying these fare increases. And make the explanation, explain why you're doing. I think that may ameliorate some of the angst from the people that will then testify. But that's not been the way those hearings have been conducted in the past.
I guess in a nutshell then, short term, fares are going up. Long term, the infrastructure problem is not going away.
Oh, no. The infrastructure problem is an ongoing issue. I mean, you need to maintain a railroad on a regular basis. And as the Federal Railroad Administration pointed out, after the derailments in Bridgeport and the commuter deaths at Spoyton Dival when the train ran off the track, the infrastructure had been neglected. The railroads had been putting much more emphasis on trying to be on time than to be safe. And years ago on the Commuter Council, I would ask the Department of Transportation each year, you know, we hire Metro North to run our train. How do we make a choice or how do we make an evaluation every year on how they're doing? I mean, by what criteria do we give them a letter grade? And the only criteria that they could cite at that time was on-time performance. And yes, it was good. It was in the upper 90 percentiles. But we never knew what was being neglected to keep those trains running on time until they literally ran off the track. So now, on-time performance is down a bit. The trains are running slower. A lot of work still needs to be done before the Federal Railroad Administration allows us even to run trains at the speeds we used to.
Jim, before we wrap up our interview, talk a bit about commuteractiongroup.org.
Well, I served for 19 years on the official Metro North Commuter Rail Council, which, as Governor Wyand pointed out, was run out of business by Governor Malloy. He was tired of our criticism of the Department of Transportation, so we slipped a bill in the hopper to basically eliminate us. Senator Wong came to our defense. The body was reconstituted, but with much less power and authority. Everybody on the old council was basically fired. New appointees were made. The governor loaded the council with people who would be supporting his position. I said, this is not a council that's going to do anything. I think I've been proven correct in the past 2 years. The council became basically a toothless lapdog. So I created a new group 2 years ago called the Commuter Action Group. And met with commuters, heard their concerns, and what our group really is commuters helping commuters. Our website includes a place where commuters can, with one click, file an official complaint with Metro North. They can also copy that complaint to their elected officials, because they're the ones who are ultimately responsible for the DOT and its operation. So if your train is late, if you don't like the conditions on the train, don't just complain to your fellow riders. Don't complain to Metro North. Certainly don't complain to the DOT. Go to your elected officials. It is an election year. And as I said 2 years ago, we will remember in November those lawmakers who stood up in support of commuters.
Sometimes the internet is a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Well, you know, I think it's very empowering to be on a train, to see something that's going wrong, and be able to open your smartphone and there and then immediately file a complaint. no one's going to remember when they get to the office or get home. Are they going to write a letter? I mean, they're not going to write a letter. But you can do this on your phone using our website, commuteractiongroup.org. And you'll find all the links there that you need to have your voice be heard.
Jim, always a pleasure. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Take care.